Welcome back to the Union Edge Laborist Talk Radio. I'm Angela Bachman here with Brittany Sheets.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for tuning in and joining us. We've been having lots of fun, and thank you to ATU Local 85 and the Fairfax Education Association for all of your support.
And right now we have a special treat. We have Octavia Koner on the phone. She works at Babeland, who recently just got their first union contract. We're very excited to hear about it. Hey Octavia, how are you?
Hey, I'm excellent. Thank you.
Well, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on.
So first off, tell us about Babeland. What is it? What do you guys do?
So Babeland is a, it's gone through a lot of different definitions, but essentially we're a sex toy shop. We have been billed as a feminist, woman-owned, body-positive, sex-positive sex toy shop. We've been in operation for over 20 years now, starting in Seattle, but with most of their locations in New York City.
Fantastic. And so you guys, we were in a battle to get a union for a pretty long time, right?
So we started organizing efforts about 2 years ago. It only really took a few months for us to get a majority of voters, a majority of people to vote yes to a union. But after we went to a vote, which was a month after, we were like, hi, please give us a union. We have a majority. And a month of really emotionally taxing and painful union busting methods by management who were playing to our political identities more than our rights as workers, trying to say, you know, the union wasn't feminist, the union wasn't this, that, the other. After a month of that whole nonsense, we went to a vote, got a vast majority, overwhelming majority. I believe it was 21 voted yes and 4 voted no to the union. And then for about a year, it took about a year, for a company of only maybe 40 workers to get a contract.
Wow. So what were some of the union-busting tactics that they were doing to you guys?
So it was a lot of appeal to emotions and a lot of appeal to, like, identity politics and postmodern ideas of, like, what solidarity looks like. So instead of coming to us and being like, hey, you know, we understand you want more money, let's talk about how we can give you more money, they came to us and were like, hey, this union, you know, they're not really feminist. They don't really care about us. They don't care about queer workers and things like that. You think they're going to help you, but really, you know, we're the ones that are going to help you. And unions, they seem like a good idea, but they're not right for us.
Wow, that's really interesting, because it's like just a different version of the same story that we hear often, you know, but it's obviously very specifically emotionally targeted at you guys.
Oh, yeah. It was really, really unfortunate that they tried to play to our sensibilities as queers, women, people of color, stuff like that. They would have like a lot of one-on-one meetings and captive audience meetings where they would sit us down and try to be like, hey, we know you personally, even though we've never met you before.
Mm. That sounds kind of awkward and creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah, apparently the owners were crying in front of certain people.
Wow. Really?
Yes.
Wow. So what were some of the things you guys were asking for in your union contract?
Our contract, we were asking for like a lot of robust non-economic change. A lot of the things we wanted were greater safety precautions, greater safety training, the ability to keep people out of our store without any issues, because we do sell, like, sensitive products to sensitive people who sometimes yell at you about the size of their penis and how it makes them sad.
Yeah, I could imagine you have a lot of interesting customers.
Yeah, we get a lot of interesting is maybe a nice word for them. So there was, like, a lot of non-economic things. And the economic things we really wanted was greater access to full-time positions, greater health care, which was really important. A lot of us are queer, like we're people of color, where people who generally do not have access to the best health care system.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we pushed really, really hard on that, especially after Trump got elected.
Yeah. When the Affordable Care Act might or might not be a thing for you to fall back on anymore, I can understand why you would want to push your employer to make sure you have the best health care you can.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, this is, to me, these sound like very basic things that almost anybody would, of course, want on the workplace, want on the job. It doesn't matter where you're working. You want access to affordable health care. You want access to, you know, full-time work and like things like that. This is just, it's important to just surviving in society today, let alone just the additional protections that you guys would want, of course.
Yeah. So what did the company have to say then? They came back and said no, I assume?
So the company generally said, oh, these are great ideas, but we can't afford it.
Uh-huh.
We're a small business. We can't afford any of these things. We can't afford to give you a pay increase. We can't afford to let you people go home when there's death threats. We can't afford this, that, the other. It was like, you know, the whole Michigas, we're small and we need sympathy, please.
Uh-huh.
We're just poor people with three houses.
Right.
I like the way you put that. Yeah, that's, I mean, it's like we see this every day. And then we see the way that they plead with you when they're trying to, you know, break you down and they don't want this union and they don't, oh, we love you, you're great employees, this and that, but sorry, we can't afford this. And it's just the emotional appeal, I don't think people realize until they necessarily go through it, is it's very taxing on a person to be able to stay strong and go through something like this, because they will drag this on for as long as they humanly possibly can, because they want you to eventually break.
Yeah, it's honestly, you know, management tactics can be at times borderline abusive and gaslighting. If we want to bring it to like a point of like, let's talk about our feelings, then we should bring it to the point of like, you know, management is essentially legalized abusers. They sat us down and they cried at us. I know that these are the kind of tactics a lot of people do, but I felt like it was a little bit insidious to not only bring it to a place of we can't afford this, but also this is not feminism.
Yeah, and also that somehow you guys should feel bad for them, and that playing that sympathy card is a little strange. But you guys stayed strong and had some great ideas, so what did you do?
So eventually we got tired of requesting basic necessities and requesting, you know, like the kind of safety trainings and things we needed. And, you know, a company of like 40-ish people, allegedly, maybe more, maybe less, and a year-long fight for a contract is obscene.
Yeah.
That's an obscene amount of time for the amount of workers. Generally, that kind of stuff should be happening much faster. And we were trying to play really, really nice, and They were not as combative as they could have been, I'll say that. But we just got sick of waiting, and Valentine's weekend was coming up, and Valentine's weekend is a very important holiday for people who want to be very sorry to the girlfriends that they've hurt and need to make them feel better. So sex toys seem to be a default go-to, please forgive me, product. And we had a strike vote. And over 80% of the staff decided, yeah, you know, this is ridiculous. We need to get what we want to get. They were proposing a number initially that they did not move on. They were proposing an amount of money that they were willing to give us or bargain with for like a few months that they weren't really budging on, and it was getting taxing. And as soon as they heard over 80% of their staff had voted to strike if they would not move on that amount of money, they nearly tripled that amount.
Wow.
That's some worker power right there.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's fantastic.
So then this was really recently, right? Because that was just this past Valentine's Day, yeah?
Yeah. So we went to that strike, and just a few weeks later, maybe 3 weeks later, we got a contract.
That's fantastic.
So wait, did you strike or you didn't?
We didn't strike. The threat alone was enough.
That's fantastic. That's the best way to do it. If you don't even have to strike at all, but they recognize it before it happens, that's awesome.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. It was very satisfying to see that number nearly triple as soon as they found out that their workers were finally, like, you know, sick of their stuff.
Well, good. And that right there, I think, is an example of, you know, when you come together like that, you have power in numbers. And in this case, you had an overwhelming majority of your workers, which was the population, essentially, in this case, that came together and you stood up for your rights, as anybody deserves these rights. I mean, it was great that you guys did that, because not all places do. And it's really important to have that show of solidarity in order to get the message across.
And I wanted to ask you quickly too, when I spoke with you on the phone earlier, we were talking about the March 8th strike. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yes. So the March 8th strike, which the Women's March actually recently dropped out of because they were far too popular for the event. There's a call for strike happening on March 8th in solidarity with International Women's Day. A lot of people have been probing their companies to, like, give them a payday off or, like, stuff like that, which I think is a great idea.
Yeah.
And on March 8th in New York City at Washington Square Park, starting at 4 o'clock, there's going to be a really large rally and then march, ending up who knows where, but probably disrupting something or other, maybe, allegedly. And I'll actually be speaking there about Babeland and our union efforts and the usefulness of a threat to strike.
Yeah.
And the usefulness of actually striking.
Well, that's awesome. And I think that's a great place to do it. And I think that we are all building a great movement going forward. And what's your advice to anyone else who may be going through this in their own instance of trying to form a union?
My advice?
Yeah. Based on your experience.
My advice is honestly threaten to strike sooner than we did.
Nice.
I like it.
My advice is as many emotional appeals as they want to make and they want to seem that they care, their bottom dollar is the most important thing, and economic pressure is going to be the greatest asset. And worker solidarity and communicating with your coworkers and getting people excited to get what you want and getting people excited to strike, I think is incredibly, incredibly useful.
And I think that is great advice. And I really hope that, you know, maybe that helps someone out there because of it's what you got to do, guys. Well, we are about out of time, but real quick, we want to thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you guys for tuning in. That was Octavia Koner. She's an employee with Babeland, and they just got their first contract with RWDSU. I'm Brittany Sheets, and you've been listening to the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.